Hi, this is JP Hill, and you're listening to 101.5 UMFM. Tell the band to go home. Go.
He said, I'm feeling bottle blonde girl swashing new Elvis. She's tattooed a tear every year since he's died. Opposite side of the street, he's a cowboy lassoing the traffic as tourists walk by. These are the diamonds, all shiny and broken, walking too quickly and you'll never notice. All of these people so beautifully crazy don't have to carry the weight of the world. All of these people that you think need saving, it hit me right between the eyes. We're all beautifully crazy. He walks down Sunset, sun cracked and broken, conducting the ocean has his own parade. She told me she's starting a sci-fi movie. I told her I saw it, then she ran away. These are the diamonds, all shiny and broken.
Welcome, everybody, to Tell the Band to Go Home. It is UMFM's weekly singer-songwriter show. My name's Jeff, but long before I got here, we weren't weekly. We were bi-weekly, but the show was originally hosted in this slot by Lisa Marie Serafin, who's back in Winnipeg. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you.
It's been a long time.
13 years.
Was it 2002?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's great. I don't know, I feel like I should be just following your lead all of a sudden. I feel like I'm reverting back to the old pattern.
Oh my gosh. No, it's your show. You've been here for 13 years.
Yeah, but I still don't know what I'm doing.
No.
So
that makes two of us.
Yeah. So did you start right when the station started, or was it shortly after? I can't remember.
It was pretty close to right when the station started. I think I hosted the show for about 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Or so. So when did the station start up again? 2000?
98.
99? 98?
I think.
Well, when Liz came on,
yes,
as program director, she phoned me up and said, "Hey, you're doing a show, right?" I said, "Of course I am. Of course I am."
So you guys were friends? That's just like...
Oh, we've been friends forever.
Yeah. And then?
For a long, long time. Like, if I mentioned how many years, she'd be mad at me.
And was this ever something you'd considered? Or I mean, you have the gift for the gab, so it seems like a natural for you. But like, was this the kind of thing you'd ever done, or was it just based on...
No, I'd never done a radio show, but I had hosted Songwriters Circle or Songwriters Nights at McNally Robinson,
right,
the West End Cultural Center. And as you said, I apparently have the gift for gab.
Well, I mean, it took me a while. Like I'm actually a very shy, quiet guy. Once the microphone goes off, I don't speak.
That's true.
So
you barely spoke to me when you came.
I know,
and
that's nothing personal. It's just me. Like, if you put a microphone on, then I actually might have something to say.
Yes.
Look, found it.
Hey, he found it.
Yeah.
My friend Lori McKenzie is here today.
It's just like old times. We're joined by Lori McKenzie.
Hey.
Who I don't think I've seen or spoken to probably since you left. But
this is your opportunity.
But, it's
to meet him again.
It's so good to have him back here. And
hello.
Welcome back. Have a seat, Lori. Make yourself at home. So you were a musician before that, though. You were a singer songwriter. Like, how long was that career sort of a thing for you?
I started performing in public when I was about 14.
Oh yeah.
So that's been a long time.
And what led you to do that?
I wanted to marry Alice Cooper, so I bugged my mom for a guitar for about a year. When I finally got it, I was 12. And then I got the guts to want to perform. I actually started writing songs around that time, and I had, I don't know, I had this notion that I just had to become a performer.
Yeah.
So I went out and I found not a coffee house, like a youth drop-in center at the Roland Michener Arena in Transcona.
Yeah.
Right across from my parents, kitty corner from my parents' house. And I found out about this drop-in center and weaseled my way in somehow and played my songs that I had written along with a guitar player who I just reconnected with on Facebook. I resisted for a long time, but it's,
I know it's.
But it's actually a really interesting thing.
It's like the great high school reunion that never ends.
Exactly. Well, I didn't go to school with Stu Wakeman, but he influenced me because he was such a natural performer himself and an amazing guitar player. And I asked him if he played with me, then I would have the courage to play. So there was Stu Wakeman playing. I played guitar, I played a bit of flute, and I remember a girl named Karen Barker singing backup with me, and another woman, Pauline, I can't remember her last name, so it was 40 years ago.
Would those have been your songs already, or were
you doing
covers at the time?
No, those are my self-written tunes, yeah. And then I wrote songs for about 4 or 5 years, and then after I graduated from high school, I got a real job and, you know.
Yeah, don't we all?
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to always work as a musician, and that's what I was striving for. But, of course, reality sets in. You need a day job.
Right.
You can't just run and be, well, maybe Lori can. That's all he's ever done. But, that's not true. There's been some other gigs in between that he's had to do to pay the mortgage. We won't mention those things. But that's basically it. I wanted to perform. I wanted to earn my living as a musician. But that ultimately wasn't possible to earn a living as a musician. So I go on the road, play a lot of dates, get not paid by a lot of people, and come home and have to pay off a credit card debt. So I actually did a lot of, you know, office work and other stuff that made ends meet. singing telegrams, murder mystery dinner theater. I read tarot cards. I worked at the casino reading tarot cards. I worked on JoJo Psychic Alliance reading tarot cards.
I remember
cards.
That. Yeah. You told me that.
Stuff like that. You know, anything for a buck, right?
Yeah.
Just so I could pay off those debts and go back on the road and rack up that credit card again. And when that became ridiculous, you know, I said, enough stuff.
Yeah.
And I turned towards another form of art to make a living.
Yeah.
If you're an artist, if you want to be an artist, never count on it to actually pay anything except maybe for groceries and really cheap rent somewhere. But I do make pottery now, and I've made quite a bit more money making coffee mugs than I ever did making music.
It's sad how little that's changed. Like,
yes.
That's still the story I hear here weekly whenever we have guests in. At what point in that career, you made, is this the only record you made? Did you ever make another record or
no,
this was it?
I was encouraged to, but I, and of course, because there's a lack of money flowing from making music, you need some money to actually make a CD. So the funding that I applied for to make my second CD was always turned down. So I decided to just call it quits, because at that time I was around 38, and I decided at 40 that I needed to do something else with my life.
Yeah.
So I did. I became a potter.
Well, good for you.
Thanks.
Well, I do want to play something off this CD.
Sure.
Because it's 1995, I guess.
I know. Eh? This is my, it's 20 years since I recorded that CD.
Yeah?
Yeah. So that means Laurie and I have been friends for over 20 years. And he's here today.
That's amazing.
And if when you play that song, we're going to get set up with some acoustic instruments and maybe play something live too.
Well, I want you to tell me a bit about making the record, but also tell me what song you want to play when you're done talking about that.
What was the first question? I'm old now.
Well, I want to know about making that record. Like, you had been, you know, a singer-songwriter for a while, and it finally came time to make this first record. Like, was it hard? Was it exciting? Was it terrifying? Was it...
Yes.
All of the above.
Yeah. I spent some time in Nashville, about 6 months, and I decided to come back after 6 months because I would have lost my health benefits as a Canadian if I didn't. But it was a good 6 months. I wrote a lot of songs. A lot of them are on that record. And when I returned, what my real intention was to take all the songs I had ever written and make demos.
Right.
Just to make demos, because my intention was to go back to Nashville and try to get a publishing deal down there. But I was talked into making a record instead. And
who talked you into it?
The producer, Dan Donahue. and I guess I was an easy arm to twist because, I don't know. I guess he had a vision for the music that I didn't.
Right.
And I went ahead and found funding and made the record. So, and I'm happy that I did, but the real intention was just to demo every single song I'd ever written in hopes of going back to Nashville and trying to get a publishing deal. That didn't happen, though.
Well, let's play something. What do you think we should play off this?
That's a good question.
It is.
Well,
that's why I asked.
Since we're celebrating the 20th anniversary of the making of this thing, how about Living a Milestone?
All right. that seems so perfect. This is Lisa Marie Serafin, and you're listening to Tell the Band to Go. We'll call it the Songwriter Circle just for today, just for fun.
Just for fun.
Yeah.
Okay, confuse everyone.
Standby and unbroken ground.
It's a fine guitar solo.
It's my favorite guitar
solo. It's way more than one note.
Oh, I know. It's more than one note.
That was pretty
good. Lori is the one who
said... I almost felt bad having the fade out there. I wanted to hear more.
Me too. I was trying to get...
She wouldn't let you go, eh, Lori? Just, that's enough.
It was a production decision.
Right. So, putting this record together, did you know all these players going in to make the record, or did Dan assemble a lot of the folks who?
No, I didn't. Actually, that's when Lori and I met, was when Dan called him up and said, come on over to the studio. I want you to meet Lisa Marie. And he told me a dirty joke. Lori did. You remember that? Do you remember that joke? Anyway, and
so many.
There's so many. It's true, and I laughed so hard.
Your demo, right?
Yeah, probably ended up making a demo with Dan first. That's true. Making a three song demo to take down to Nashville,
right?
And then that's when I met Lori. So Dan, in answer to your question, Dan did put together all the players for the record, and I think that I brought in a few people to do some backup vocals. Well, I don't think. I know I brought in a few people to do backup vocals. Jeanette Roth from Cost of Living.
Right.
Do you remember Jeanette?
Well, I remember Cost of Living.
Cost of Living, yeah. Maybe we could find their CD in the CD library, because that would be a hoot to play a little blast from the past.
Yeah.
Seeing as we're looking back 20 years here.
Yeah.
So, all the players, Kevin
Torgelson.
Thank you.
Yep.
Torgelson. Sorry, Kevin. Kevin Torgelson on bass.
Yep.
That was the first time I met him. But I'd met several of the other players that are on the CD before at gigs. I had played, or sang rather, backup vocals for the Owen Clark Orchestra.
Oh, yeah.
So Rick Boughton, who played with me at the Folk Festival, was...
Right.
I don't think he played on... No, he didn't play. Greg Black, I believe, though, played drums. Yes, he did. Thanks for passing me the liner notes.
Figured it was better in your hands.
Yeah. Thank you. So Kevin was new to me, but he's out and about playing bass with everybody and then some.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a fantastic musician. All the musicians on here were just fantastic. I enjoyed singing and playing with everybody.
Yeah.
We had so much fun in the studio. Even Liz was there. So you know the crazy polka organ track?
Uh-huh.
That's a hidden track on the
right.
CD? That was Liz and Dan goofing around in the studio one day, and we were laughing so hard, we were all crying.
Really?
It was very, very funny. I actually didn't realize that Dan Donahue could get that silly. But he does, and yeah, he can, and it was a wonderful experience. It was always, actually, it was always Dan and Lori trying to make me laugh, and then yeah, I couldn't sing.
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of hours laughing.
Yeah.
Good experience.
The CD, when it all came together, did it meet your expectations? Were you pleased with it?
I was pleased with most of it, but I do remember calling Dan in tears about something the day before it was to go to get mastered.
Right.
That I had to do over, and I think it was the song "Jackie and the Jazz Man," and I just can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe it was backing vocals.
Okay.
I was in tears, and I said, I just can't release it like that. I just can't. I have to come back and sing something. I can't remember. But it turned out to my satisfaction in the end.
Yeah.
And it got a lot of critical acclaim, the CD.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. But it didn't really lead anywhere after that.
Yeah, sometimes is the case. I know, yeah, we used to talk about the difficulty of getting paying gigs and stuff like that. And you were one of those people who was adamant about never playing for free.
Right.
And I
still am.
It's still one of those things that's an ongoing battle to this very day, and
it's
probably more so now than ever before.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways.
A lot of people think that art work is not work.
Right.
It's fun.
Right.
It is fun. We're having fun. So why should everybody have a job that they hate?
Yep.
Answer that question, people. If you're not going to do something that makes you happy, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a reality for everybody. Sometimes we have to do things we don't like just to make ends meet. But largely, I think with life, you really need to follow where your heart's pulling you.
Right.
And do the things that make you happy, because money isn't the end all and the be all. It's just a way to pay the rent and put some food in your belly.
That's right.
So yeah.
I want to ask you a bit about the Nashville days, I guess, before this record, though. It sounds like you met a lot of exciting people. Like, that sounded like an exciting, amazing time. Tell me a bit about what happened when you went down there. Like, was it hard to kind of get involved in the scene down there, or did you just...
No, because everyone wants you to play for free, so you can pretty much play wherever you want, but you're not going to get paid for it. But... yeah, I went down and I was pretty much disillusioned for the first 3 weeks. It was difficult. I wasn't sure Nashville was the place I needed to be. I was thinking of going to Austin, Texas, and a fellow that I met at a writer's night, John McGree, talked me into staying in Nashville and not going to Austin. So I did. I stayed in Nashville for a little bit longer. I got settled. I found a roommate. She didn't turn out to be a great roommate, unfortunately, because she was doing lots of hard drugs, and I was worried that she was going to pawn my guitar one day, so I decided to find another place to live, and that was a good roommate situation.
Yeah.
And what happened, I met tons of amazing people, a fella named Rusty Horn. I wish that I had brought his CD with me from home, because he sent me things. He's not a recording artist, but he has a recording studio at home, and he's sent me some fantastic CDs that I just kind of forgot everything when I was packing. You know, you pack for a trip home, and there's lots of things you need to pack, because you don't know how the weather is going to be.
Yeah.
Yesterday, it looked like there was going to be a tornado in Transcona. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Trees fell down, branches were everywhere, garbage cans all up and down the alley. So it's one of the things I forgot was Rusty's CD. Matthew Ryan was one of the singer-songwriters that I met.
I wanted to get onto this because Matthew Ryan is honest to God, one of my favorite songwriters in the world.
Mine too.
A little bit obsessed around our house with Matthew Ryan, and we just love him. And I don't even remember whether you had really talked about him when we did the show or not. But a little while ago, my friend Gary Annable was watching this old video of Matthew Ryan on YouTube, and right near the end, there you are, and we were both just I believe the word is gobsmacked. Like, we just didn't know what, like, how the hell did you become friends with Matthew Ryan? I mean, he wasn't Matthew Ryan back then, right? Was he even called Matthew Ryan?
Oh, of course. That's his real name. Well, see, that's how much I know about Matthew Ryan. It's not his real name. But anyway, yes, he was called Matthew Ryan back then. He was 23 years old, I believe, because I was 33 when I was down in Nashville. I turned 33 down there. So, yeah, we're 10 years apart. I saw him at the Bluebird Cafe, and I believe it was like an audition situation. So every year at the Bluebird, they have an open call.
Yeah.
And it's basically a cattle call. Everyone stands outside in line in early January, which is not too bad if you're from Canada, but if you're from Nashville, it's pretty cold at that time.
Right.
But we stood outside and we waited and waited and waited our turn to get in and audition. And everybody in the audience were musicians. It was a Sunday afternoon. The cafe is closed. And Matthew got on stage and he sang a song that was so smart and cheeky and arrogant and smarmy and all the things that I just thought were a little bit of a slap in the cheek. You know, and it was so clever and well put together. It was a song about breaking up, and it was about 30.
I think half of his songs were about breaking up. doesn't really narrow it down very well.
Hey, if you're a songwriter and you're not breaking up with somebody, you got nothing to write about. But his song was about a minute long because he said, that's all I needed to say. And I just thought he was amazing. So I approached him and I said, hey, do you know about this songwriter's night? It's at Guido's Pizzeria on Tuesday nights. And you should come. And he did. And that interview that you saw on YouTube, that was done in about, I think, Anderson Williams recorded that for a TV station down in the Carolinas, I believe, maybe North Carolina. And I'd forgotten all about it until I saw it on Facebook and went and looked at it again. I was like, oh, my God, look at my hair. That was so so sticky uppy and the big glasses. It was very, of course, it was very 90s. And but then I remembered that interview being done. So that interview was actually done in the basement at Guido's Pizzeria where they actually had the Songwriters Night on Tuesdays. And it was, I don't really remember if they were there to record Matthew or all of us. But whatever's on YouTube is mainly Matthew.
Right.
So I hadn't seen it, I guess, or I don't remember having seen it before.
Right.
So it was kind of fun to see that. And Matthew really got somewhere, too, which is
absolutely,
kind of fun
to
see somebody from that era actually do something and make it his lifelong career live long and prosper with music.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we play something from him? Would that
yeah,
be all right?
Let's play something from Matthew.
Do you have any favorites? Any requests?
Matthew Ryan, sorry, man. well, one of my favorite albums is one from, I think, the middle of his career. Is it called Bird on a Wire? That album?
Are you talking about From a Late Night High Rise?
No, the one before that.
Concussion?
No. Well, maybe it was before that. Hey, Jeff, play whatever you want. Since you're the...
Got any songs? No?
You're the biggest fan.
Well, see, that's where the problem comes in, because I love them all so much. Here, how about this one? This is breakup song at its finest, I think.
Okay.
Here's something from our old pal Matthew Ryan. It's in the songwriter circle.
Thousand yard stare. As I recall all the time and the money we spent. Where I became irrelevant. This girl took a bow on the walls, ran my finger over the screen door. Every kiss has reeked up a trail since my hair went jump the guardrail. Sad who she wanted to be once more. Now every night I'm paralyzed by the fear of rope burns and morning light. And the smell of wet cement since I became irrelevant. Sticky mud and heartache, it's like a breaking bone. There's always 12 hours on a missionary line. You'd think I would have spared some time, but I didn't. I never went home. Now it occurs to me like lines undrawn or a bullet from a shotgun. But she knew long ago what it meant to feel irrelevant. Since I became irrelevant.
That is Matthew Reinoff of his debut record, Mayday. And
Mayday?
Yeah.
See, I'd never heard that that album before. I would love to have a copy.
Oh, it's so good.
I wonder if it's still in print.
It's the one that he never seems to sell. So I don't know whether it still is or not.
See, because that was his first record, so I think that's the closest to the Matthew Ryan that I heard.
Exactly, yeah.
When I was living down in Nashville. So that's the one I really, really wanted at first.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right, well, I'm glad we could go there for you. Anyway,
thank you.
So let's welcome Laurie McKenzie here. Laurie McKenzie, you are like Winnipeg's accompanist of choice. You're like, you pop up in all kinds of places playing with all kinds of people. It is such a great pleasure to have you back down here, adding your sweet, sweet touch to what we do.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
You've played with a lot of people over the years, haven't you, Laurie?
Like, yes.
And he still is.
Yeah. Who are you playing with these days? Are you still...
Well, it depends on the week, you know. What was that?
It was just a squeaky microphone. Sorry about that.
It sounded like somebody got goosed.
Just a squeaky mic.
Anyway, I'm currently playing in a band of one of several called The Shoes. I did this with Bill Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
And Greg Gardner. And Bill's wife, Debbie, is playing keyboards in it. Bill and Greg and I had done a show about a year and a half ago with the Manitoba Chamber Orchestra. It was called Beatles and Strings, and it was all Beatle music because we're all fanatics about that band.
Yeah.
And So we chose to do the stuff, of course, that had orchestration that nobody ever hears. And if they do, they don't hear it done the way it happened. It was a chance to maybe get a live experience of that music.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed it so much, we figured we'd, you know, Bill called up and said, hey, you want to put a set of Beatles stuff, but of course not that. And because the lineup is guitar, keys, bass, drums, I said, then it can't be the guitar Beatles
right.
stuff. It has
right.
to have be stuff with keyboards in it. So we, you know, the downside of it is it's really tough stuff, you know, because it's later period, you know, Abbey Road material
right.
and stuff like
right.
that. And trying to do some of that stuff live can be a challenge. You know,
I bet you're up for it.
Well, we just like it so much.
Yeah.
But, you know, you realize, man, they were how old when they did all this?
Yeah.
And we're how old now trying to do it? Gee, anyway.
It was all the transcendental meditation and yoga they must have been doing.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. It's the energy of youth and their innate musical brilliance.
Yeah.
Where did you just come back from? You were on...
I was playing with the Shoes. By the way, can I tell you why we're called the Shoes?
Please
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
It was, it was because doing all the Beatles stuff, we were trying to come up with a name, and there was a point where you know, interviewers often in the press, especially in the 60s, asked really stupid questions, like, what's your favorite color?
I still do.
So they asked the Beatles, why the Beatles? Why'd you call yourselves the Beatles? And Lennon said something like, well, it's just a name, like Shoes. And Paul said, yeah, we could have been the Shoes for all you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so we're doing Beatles songs and... So, you know, we could have been the Beatles. You know. Anyway.
Cool.
It's just a name.
Yeah.
It's just
a name, man.
Like this Larrivé guitar that I'm borrowing from Lori.
Who borrowed it in turn from Heather Bishop.
Yeah, and you did a concert with Heather Bishop not too long ago, right?
Yes. A few. We've been doing some folk festivals this year in Saskatchewan and Manitoba and concert in Calgary, and you know, so yes,
he's excellent. A busy guy.
Yeah,
whenever I call him, I just get his machine. That's it.
He's screening you. Did you ever think of that?
Oh my!
You got to be home to screen someone.
And are you still touring with the Guess Who? Is that still a thing?
No, I left that band about a year and a half ago.
All right.
Yeah,
but
I did 8 years, and it was time to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have to say that when I saw you all, so they never play in Canada because there's apparently no audience for the Guess Who in Canada.
Or no, actually, we probably played one Canadian date a year.
Okay.
And it started out generally being corporate, you know,
yeah.
a corporate
yeah.
thing, and then it moved to a casino, and then all the others were, I believe, my memory serves, festival situations,
right.
rock festival, or where the token classic rock act at
right.
a large several-day outdoor country festival, things
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
But mostly in the States.
Oh, yeah. Always in the States, otherwise, yeah.
Well, they just played the Red River X this year.
Yes.
That's right, they did. Mm-hmm.
And I sat in with them on that.
Oh, good.
I can't say why, but
you know that this is what struck me when I. So what happened was, I said to Lori, "If you ever get anywhere near Canada, the close it doesn't matter how close and how far away it is, we're going to try to come and see you." And so he phoned up and said, "We're going to be in Niagara Falls, New York," and this was I think in like 3 years ago. Three summers ago. And so my husband and I hooked up the camper and we went to Niagara Falls
nice.
for our 10th anniversary. And we saw them at an outdoor venue, the Hard Rock Cafe. And I was so amazed because not only did Lori play exactly what you would expect to hear, the
yeah.
guest who played, he made his guitar sound like every single track that that was ever produced in the studio. That's what came out of his amplifier.
Well, that would be a bit of a challenge because there were several guitarists that kind of passed through, right? So you'd have to...
It's smoke and mirrors.
He was jumping.
Jumping?
He did. He jumped. He still can jump. It's amazing. We're all gray and old now. This is why I'm saying things like this. But we still have a lot
When you leap, it's like an inch.
Woo!
We'll take what we can get, won't we?
Exactly. You're a little looking a little gray around the temples,
I know,
too, Jeff.
I feel like the oldest one in the room all of a sudden. I got old and fat, and you guys look great.
Well, thanks.
Your guitar is in front of us.
Thank you.
So, should we play something?
You should. You should definitely do that.
Okay. Well, now we have our guitars tuned and strapped on. We're going to play something for you from my album. And... I should tell you the reason why I even picked up a guitar again, and that was just because some time had passed, and I had left teaching belly dance, and playing music again was becoming interesting to me. I joined a choir, a local choir, but I really craved to do my own thing too. So I started picking up a guitar again, and... Last Christmas, somebody saw me at a party and said, "Hey, you want to throw together a few tunes and play at this fundraiser in January?" And I said, "Okay," just because I say okay to pretty much anything. And don't read into that. And so Chris Maris and I worked together for about 6 hours to present 5 songs. And then we liked working together so well that we just kept on going. And speaking of paying gigs, we actually have one in September in West Quebec where I now live. So that's why I picked up the guitar again and started performing again, because it's fun now. Before it was work, and now it's fun. But I still have the, I'm sorry, I won't play unless I get paid rule.
Right.
So, and we are... actually doing a paying concert. So
awesome.
I dusted off a couple of tunes from my album, and this one's called Holding My Breath. We good to go?
I hope so.
I close the door, I keep looking back. Have I remembered to pack all that I will need? There's one thing that's been forgotten. Tell me what I want to hear. La-da-dee-da. If you lie awake, are you missing me? Or do you see it all from above the trees down here on the ground? The mail is here. There's a letter from you. Thank you.
Yeah, you picked it up again very nicely, I think.
Yeah, I never lost the callus on my first finger. Here,
were, like,
it's permanent.
Were you playing like in the house or just not playing at all for a long time?
I was not playing at all for a long time.
Really?
And that's not the first time I did that in my life.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up my acoustic guitar for, I don't know, maybe 5 or 7 years during a relationship. One of my very first boyfriends, who was jealous that I was a musician, so I stopped playing. Isn't that dumb? Girls, if you have a boyfriend who's jealous that you're a musician, you need to dump his ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, did you have to practice a lot, or did it come back to you?
Surprisingly, just like finding my way here today,
yeah.
It was instinctual.
Nice.
I don't think you ever really lose it. The muscle memory's there. And I had been singing with the choir and such, so I had a bit of vocal exercise going on there. But I still have to look at the chords and the words for the songs that I wrote.
That's okay. So does Lucinda. You
know? Yes. Well, I got that tip by watching Lucinda on Austin City Limits. I was like, yeah, she's got a music book. Damn, I'm doing the same thing from now on because it's really a problem. Do you remember when we were in Ear Falls and I forgot the words to comfort someone?
I remember when we were in Ear Falls.
Let's not ask too much.
Well, I asked somebody out in the audience if they, hey, anybody buy my CD? Can you bring up the lyric sheet? Because I can't remember the words to my effort. And, you know, the opening line is all I really needed. Then I was good to go.
Yeah.
But the memory, I mean, there's lots of things at play when you're on stage, right?
Yeah.
You're playing in front of people and they're doing stuff and they're walking in front of the stage or drinking beer or, you know, waving flags. Or you're scared or nervous, and there's 100 things to grab your attention away from the task at hand. And sometimes closing your eyes tight and really concentrating helps, but sometimes it's overwhelming too, and you just forget.
Right.
I've seen Steve Earle forget lyrics on stage, and John Hyatt, and pretty much anybody I've ever seen in concert has forgotten lyrics or made them up.
Yeah. You want to do another one? Or
It's up to you. It's your show, baby.
I've thrown it over to you, though.
I'm throwing it back.
Well, evidently, there's a game of cats going on in the studio.
Well, I'll tell you why. Several reasons why I came to Winnipeg. And one of them was my mom's 80th birthday.
Yes.
Yeah, my mom turned 80 on August 21st. So happy birthday, Mom. And it was a great party. We had a little barbecue. Nothing big, right?
Yeah.
And then I planned a bunch of stuff around it. And I don't even remember how you and I decided to do this radio show, but somehow it involved the video that Gary Annable found.
That's right.
And then I told you I was coming to Winnipeg, and you're like, hey, come on the show. Or maybe I said, hey, can I come on your show? Which sounds more like me. Hey, I don't know why, but here I am.
Yeah. No, that's great.
And on Tuesday, I'm taking my CD and my cassette tape.
You still got cassettes, eh?
Yes, I do. And CDs in the garage. So if anyone wants one, I'll sell you the CD. $20 with shipping. Contact me through Facebook.
Yeah.
Lisa Marie Serafin. I'm going to take a whack of press clippings and old photos over to the Transcona Historical Museum. Yes, I was raised in Transcona. So Transcona Historical Museum is going to get a whack of stuff and my CD and tape and a bunch of press clippings.
Neat.
Yeah, so that's another thing that's happening while I'm here.
Good for you.
And visiting lots and lots of old, really good friends.
Yes.
And as in old, I mean we have a long history.
That's right.
Yeah.
And other things.
And
it means what you think it means, too.
Yes, we all have gray hair. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
All right, sing a song.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know which one to sing. How about if we pick a song out of the CD library that's here? Hey, you know what? The Wailin' Jennies.
Yes.
Were one of my first guests on Songwriter Circle.
That's right.
So there's a CD.
Their very first public performance was on
that's
this
right
show,
on my show called Songwriter Circle, which is now called Tell the Band.
I like
the
to tell
to
people it was my show at the time, so you know, try to keep that quiet.
Okay, sorry,
I like
man
to take the credit.
Okay.
I deserve none.
Your favorite track off that because I haven't heard that one. That's the latest CD that I found in the library. It's from 2007, I believe.
11.
11. Sorry, whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not all that prolific these days. Oh, this one. I always liked this one. Hopefully, this is no longer the case, but it certainly was the case yesterday. Here's something from the Wailin' Jennies. You're listening to the Songwriter Circle.
When that storm comes, don't run for cover. When that storm comes, don't run for cover. When that storm comes, don't run for cover. Don't run from the coming storm. No, there ain't no in running when that rain falls, let it wash away. When that rain falls, let it wash away. When that rain falls, let it wash away. Let it wash away that falling rain. Tears and the trouble. When those lights flash, hear that thunder roll. When those lights flash, hear that thunder roll. When those lights flash, hear that thunder. When you listen to that thunder roar, let your spirit soar. Let love through your door. storm comes. Don't run for cover. Don't run from the coming storm, 'cause you can't keep a storm from coming. Storm comes. Don't run for cover.
How'd you like that? That's kind of pretty.
Lovely, lovely vocals.
Is it? Yeah.
Yes. But Kara Luft was an original member.
That's right.
Of the Wailing Jennies.
That's right.
Oh, I'm going to see.
Hold it, ladies. Take it easy. So did you want to say something about that?
That Kara Luft was one of the original members of the Wailing Jennies.
Yes.
And her solo career is fantastically successful. And I've seen lots and lots on social media about Kara lately. And I found one of her CDs in your CD library, so I thought we should take a listen to some Kara Luft.
Absolutely. She's been working a lot lately with J.D. Edwards, also from Winnipeg. I don't know if you know him, but they have a group called the Small Glories, which is a big thing, but yeah, here's one of our solo things.
Cool.
Yeah, there is Kara Lovely Luft from her album Delight Fantastic.
That was fantastic.
It's produced by Neil Osborne, isn't it, that record, I think?
I love it. It's called Blackwater Side.
Yeah.
Lori was telling me something about that. Isn't Kara Lovely Luft a huge Led Zeppelin fan?
Yes.
Yeah.
And a version of that, it was called Black Mountainside, is instrumentally done by Jimmy Page on their first album. Second song, side two.
Second song, side two. Side two. What's side two? Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Records.
Records. I love vinyl. I still have
the
lots
age
of vinyl.
Rears its head again.